The views expressed in this show are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of the Department of Defense, Department of the Navy, or the U.S. government. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Philosophication with Ginger and the Beard. I'm Michael, and I have red hair.
And I'm Jason, and I have a beard.
All right, so I just got back the other day from Los Angeles. I flew out there Wednesday. I flew out there Wednesday so I could interview with Colin Moriarty again. I did that about 3.5 months ago, and it was awesome. We talked about the Constitution and the military and honor and all kinds of good stuff. And he was kind enough to have me back on his show. And he doesn't have a lot of returning guests, but he has the same little spiel for all of them, which is 5 questions. So he asked me 5 questions, and it was a great show, great conversation. And then we decided to keep the conversation going once that was over, and just switch seats, and I was interviewing him for my show. So keep an eye out for that sometime in the next couple weeks. I mean, by the time this comes out, maybe a week for Colin Moriarty's, it's called Colin's Last Stand Fireside Chats. I was on for episode 41 a few months ago, so I'm not sure which episode it'll be, but it'll be out pretty soon. And then once he releases that one, I'll release the second part of the conversation, so people can just jump straight from his to mine. So it was awesome. Had a great time. I spent like 2.5 hours at his place, and we talked about American exceptionalism. We talked about the Constitution and what we would do to change it, how we would amend it. Talked about a convention of the states and what that would be like. And then we talked about white privilege for a little while. So that was pretty fun. That was on my show for that part of the interview, nothing to do with the Constitution at all.
Nice. And you're two white guys. So
yeah, two white guys talking about white privilege.
No liberal cares anything about what you said at all.
Or on the other hand, you could say that two experts on being white were talking about being white. So anyway,
you are really good at being white.
Yeah, I know. Look at me. I mean, geez.
I'd say you're better at being pink, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at both. But anyway, so that was great. But was actually even better. And, I hope he actually sees this. But my Uber driver, I ended up having a 3-hour conversation with my Uber driver. It took about an hour to get back to the hotel after this interview with Colin. And then we parked in front of the hotel. This sounds creepy, but I was in the back seat. He was in the front, so it's not weird. And we parked in front of the door and sat there for 2 hours after that, talking about politics. And this guy is like a self-described, like, how did he say it? A progressive liberal, he was expressing his dissatisfaction with the Democratic Party because they just aren't liberal enough, really. That's how liberal this guy was. And we ended up, it wasn't contentious ever, but, he really was not afraid to ask questions that were, otherwise that some people might find uncomfortable, we talked about Donald Trump. We talked about Hillary Clinton. We talked about abortion, gun control, healthcare. Like, we just went down the line, and it was an amazing conversation, actually. And it actually gave me a lot of hope in humanity, because I think we all get the impression, either from doing it personally or from just being told, that it's actually pointless to argue with people or debate people. And I know you like to fuck with people all the time on Facebook, and like, you're pretty intact. I mean, you're nice about it, but you want to argue with people, and you find that productive. What?
I'm a contrarian on social media.
Right, exactly. And
go argue with people because it's fun.
Right, right. So I've always been of the philosophy that's fun for me, and it's not fun for most people. And at most, I'm getting some kicks out of it. And maybe best case scenario, I'm never going to change the person's mind who I'm talking to. But maybe somebody out there who's observing, maybe they'll think about something that they hadn't thought about before. But I'm telling you, this guy was so surprised that I was on the complete opposite side of him on everything, and that it was, and that I was making decent points, and I wasn't some, like, you know, caricature that he's been described that the right is, or whatever, or people that are on the opposite side of the issues, or it's not just a straw man, it's like a caricature. And he was really surprised that I could actually lay out an articulate argument. And I'm not saying I changed him and that he's now a libertarian, but I will say that I definitely, like, he admitted to me several times that I really got him thinking about it, and that he needed to go and do some more reading and think some more and reflect. By the end of it, he was talking about starting a new political party with me, that, like, the two of us could, you know, start a political party together that would, you know, be the new way forward.
Nice.
Yeah. A party where we're allowed to disagree about things like abortion and, you know, specific, he called them third rail.
Don't call it new way forward, though. That sounds like some communist shit.
Yeah. It sounds like Hillary campaign or something. I don't know. But anyway, you know, you're talking about starting a new party where basically the only thing we all agree on is that we're spending way too much money and we need to get our shit together and kind of rein in power, government power, but that we're allowed to disagree about what, you know, third rail issues, like, you know, who pays for what and taxes, yeah, and abortion and stuff. Those are things that need to be settled, but we'll settle them later. So anyway, it was a great conversation. It renewed my hope that it is actually worth it to talk to people, you know, no matter how far the other direction they are. It's probably one out of 100, if that, that'll actually be as receptive as he was. But we had a great conversation, no hostility, completely opposite sides of everything. But we had a great conversation. So shout out to that. Shout out if he's listening. He said he'd look me up. So we'll see.
Nice. Yeah, that actually reminds me. I got into a little bit of a sparring match on Facebook at the end of last week. It was like Thursday, like Wednesday or Thursday or something like that, or maybe Tuesday. I don't remember. But anyway, it was about Colin Kaepernick, and, you know, we can talk about the specifics of it maybe if we ever talk about Colin Kaepernick. But there's one guy that I'm friends with who commented kind of towards the end of the conversation and said something like, you know, there's probably not any point in talking about this stuff. Like, you should probably just focus on strongman, because that, you know, it seems like that's what you're really into. And because it's probably, you're not going to change anybody's mind, and it's probably pointless. And I responded and I was like, I mean, the guy doesn't comment very articulately. And so it's kind of hard to figure out what he's trying to say sometimes. But I responded back and I was just like, I just like talking about stuff, man. And, you know, I think there's enough reasonable people out there that we can have these kinds of conversations and they can be productive and useful. And I just left it at that. But that's, you know, it's stuff like that, like what you're just talking about, that makes me think I'm right.
Yeah.
About that. Like, it is still useful to talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with the Kaepernick thing, it seems like, if you're on the, you know, pro Kaepernick side of this issue, then it seems like talking about it, arguing about it, is the best thing you could have. That's what they always try and say, is like, it's not about disrespecting the flag, it's about starting a dialogue and starting a conversation. But then when you have the conversation, everybody gets butthurt, right? But it's like, you know, that should be the best case scenario to someone who's on that side of the issue, is like, well, you should be glad that we're talking about this, you know? So.
Yeah. So anyway, that's not what we're
usually
talking about. Yeah. What's that?
So granted, usually the conversation debilitates into, you know, someone being a rich crybaby, or, you know, or how much they actually sacrifice, and less to do with the actual,
yeah, know, that's really the
of thing. Systemic racism.
Like, the irony of the whole thing is that he did that to bring attention to the issue of police violence against black people, but nobody's talking about that.
Right.
Nobody's talking about police violence against black people. Everybody's talking about Kaepernick and how right or wrong he was to take a knee. And nobody's talking about what he hoped they would talk about.
Yeah. People are talking about, you know, free speech of the players. They're talking about, freedom of association of the teams, like the owners, and they're talking about, you know, whether or not the NFL can or should do anything about it. You know, that's what everyone ends up talking about. And now they're talking about whether or not Kaepernick actually sacrificed, you know.
Yeah. It just seems like a, you know, set aside the question of whether that method of protest was disrespectful to America or the flag or the troops or whatever. Right. It just doesn't seem very effective, for one thing. Like, if nobody's talking about the thing that you wanted them to talk about, that doesn't seem like an effective form of protest.
Yeah, everyone's talking, but not about the right thing.
Right.
All right, so I think today we were going to try and talk about the Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris debates. Well, conversation, whatever they wanted to call it. I think they just released two of them. I just saw
it was really more of a conversation. Like,
yeah.
It was kind of promoted as a debate, but it was really more of a conversation.
Sure. Yeah. So we just got to see those. We both saw them last week, pretty recently.
I was super excited for that, by the way. Like,
I've been waiting so long.
These debates happened like 4 months ago or something like that, and they've taken this long to release them on release them to the public on YouTube and podcasting services. So I was super excited for it. I was like, finally, I get to see it. But yeah, they were really good.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Because I really, you know, whatever controversy this stirs up, I love both of those guys. And
yeah, me too.
You know,
I'm the same way.
Really different in a lot of ways, and they're very similar in a lot of ways. But I love both of those guys, and I've always, every other conversation they ever had, I was so disappointed in how it just debilitated. But these were, I was really excited for this, and we'll talk to the specifics.
It helped a lot to have Brett Weinstein as the moderator. Like, he really did a good job of keeping him on track and not letting him get off on like minor quibbles about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, he did a pretty good job. And I'm just glad he's there because he's freaking genius.
Yeah.
And he actually contributed a little bit, you know.
Mm.
So you want to kick it off? Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah. So, well, first off, like you just said, I respect the hell out of both of these guys. I think they are just incredible intellectually. Like, every time I hear, especially Sam Harris, every time I hear him speak, I'm like, I wish I could be that articulate. Like, he has a vocabulary that must be like four times the size of a normal person's vocabulary. And I don't know. It's awesome to listen to. But yeah, so I highly respect both of those guys. And I think a lot of the people, like, I've seen people talk about these debates a little bit. And you'll see a lot of people that are in one camp or the other. Like, they're a Jordan Peterson fan or they're a Sam Harris fan. And I've seen comments on this debate where people are like, oh yeah, Sam Harris just, you know, destroyed Jordan Peterson and wiped the floor with him, and he was totally right. Or Jordan Peterson was just, you know, destroyed Sam Harris on this point or that point. And I didn't think it was like that at all. Like, I think those people are completely missing the point. This wasn't supposed to be like that. It wasn't supposed to be contentious like that, and it wasn't. Like, they did get a little heated at times, but it wasn't contentious. It wasn't supposed to be. And it was a really productive conversation, and I think there was a lot to be learned. And I'm not really in one camp or the other. Like, even now, even after listening to those two debates, I still don't know really who I agree with more. Like, I don't think I would... I wouldn't want to choose a side, you know, quote unquote. But yeah, it was just really interesting. And there were a few things that well, why don't we just go into it? So I wrote down a few things, and the first thing is something Jordan Peterson said, and we were just talking about conversations, so I feel like we might as well kick off with this. At one point, they were talking about how we derive our moral values, something like that. And Jordan Peterson said this quote that I love. He said, "Respect for the process that updates moral judgment is the highest of all possible values." So
like free speech, kind of, or at least
part of it. I mean, that's the process.
Yeah.
I would take it a step beyond free speech, though, because it's not just free speech. It's intelligent speech. Like, we need it to be, we need the speech to be intelligent, right?
Yeah.
So if we think about what that means, respect for the process, what is the process that updates moral judgment? So we talk about morals a lot and ethics. We were just talking about this, you know, in our first episode about the atomic bombing, but anytime we talk about morals or ethics, the question comes up, where do we get our morals from, or where do we get our ethics from, or how do we know what's right and wrong? And this is an ongoing process. It's been going on since humans became self-aware, right? We've been trying to figure out what's right and wrong for a long time. And we don't have all the right answers. We maybe we'll never have all the right answers, but what we hope for is that as time goes on, we get a better and better picture of what's right and wrong. And we use some process to do that. And Jordan Peterson here is saying that respect for that process is the highest possible value, because that process is what gives us all of our other values. So if we don't respect that process, then we don't have any way of finding out if our values right now are stupid. Right?
Yeah.
So do you want to jump in? You have any thoughts so far?
Yeah. it seems like, even though this is more of like a, you know, Steven Pinker kind of point, not that Jordan Peterson is not a fan of the Enlightenment, but he's, you know, more critical than some others, you know, kind of points out the bad and the good, but, that really strikes me as such an Enlightenment idea. And, that the Enlightenment itself is kind of founded on that exact thing that, you know, I think if the Enlightenment taught us anything, it's that people need to be free to think and free to speak and free to engage in conversation without being, you know, strung up for treason or, you know, just shut down from being able to talk. And like the fringe ideas, the outliers need to be able to, you know, they need to be able to thrive, because only in an environment where people are free to think and talk and, you know, come up with new ideas, can we really thrive, you know? And you could thank that for not just, you know, Western ideology and, you know, for our, you could thank it for our republic and for all the ideals that we hold dear in the West, but also all the ingenuity, all the technological advancements, all because of free inquiry, free thought, and free speech. If it weren't for all of that, there'd be no innovation, you know, there'd be no new ideas, and we'd be stuck like we were for thousands of years. I mean, you think about, just technology is a good example, but it applies to ethics as well, and just kind of systems of government. But, you know, think of how long it took to get out of the Iron Age or whatever, you know, and then you think of the last couple hundred years and how we've skyrocketed with our technology. And that's just one side effect of an environment where people are free to think and inquire and converse, and the best ideas win.
Right. So to put that kind of in a modern well, first of all, with Jordan Peterson and the Enlightenment, I don't necessarily think he's critical of the Enlightenment and the Enlightenment values. I think it's more so that he doesn't think those values came from the Enlightenment period specifically.
Yeah, he doesn't want to give it too much credit. It's not that he doesn't, he loves everything about it, I think. You know, for the most part.
He just says that those ideas were in development long before the Enlightenment.
Sure.
But anyway, so to put that in kind of a modern context, you know, we hear a lot about censorship today. We hear a lot about especially social media and censorship on college campuses. You know, social media, the whole Alex Jones thing, you know, Alex Jones just got banned from Twitter or whatever. And, you know, some other people have been suspended from Twitter, YouTube videos demonetized, whatever, all of that stuff. We have that. We have, and it seems to be directed towards one side of the political spectrum and not the other. We've also heard a lot in the past couple of years about things going on college campuses as far as certain viewpoints being suppressed. And so this is all forms of censorship, but not by the government, right? It's either private companies that are, you know, social media platforms shutting people down, or mobs on college campuses shutting people down. And some people seem to be perfectly okay with this because it's not the government doing it, right? And I know you had an episode not too long ago where you talked about this on Unalienable, but this is why they're getting it wrong. Like, the whole reason we have a First Amendment and we protect people from government interference with speech is because we respect the process that updates our moral judgment. We respect right. free speech because it's the mechanism by which we update our moral values. And it's no different when private entities or citizens are shutting each other down. It's not the government doing it, but it's the same end. It's the same disrespect for the process that updates moral judgment. And that's why those people are wrong. Like, it doesn't make any difference that it's not the government doing it. It's the same disrespect for the process.
Right. Yeah. It's like Matt Christensen said on my show, he said, it's just a different jackboot.
You right. know?
It's, I don't want any jackboot, you know, it's not any better, you know, whether it's an angry mob that's doing it on social media or an angry mob, I don't know, tearing down statues or, you know, breaking windows and throwing Molotov cocktails, whatever the hell it is, or if it's the government itself doing it, they're trying to stop speech from happening and trying to stop ideas from spreading, then what difference does it make who's doing it? Just as harmful.
Right. So yeah, I just thought that was worth mentioning. I really like that quote, and I think he's exactly right. I think that should be our highest value. I think freedom of expression should be our highest value because it's the mechanism that we use to update all our other values. So yeah, that's about all I got to say about that. You got anything else?
No.
Cool. All right. So next thing I wrote down here is they came up with this. This is something I can't remember who coined this term in the first place. It might have been Brett Weinstein, but it's something Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris have talked about. You know, on their first podcast, on the first conversation they had on Sam's podcast, they got bogged down in the definition of truth, and it was just excruciating to listen to. That was a conversation that failed. But I think it was Brett Weinstein that came up with this term. He came up with the concept of metaphorical truth. And what that means is that he says there are some things that are false in a literal sense, but will benefit you if you behave as if they were true. And an example he gave of this was, or the example that Brett Weinstein always goes back to is the belief that porcupines can throw their quills. So if you believe that, so porcupines can't throw their quills, that's not a thing. But if you believe that and you behave as if that were true, you might keep your distance from porcupines more than you otherwise would, and you might be less likely to get stung by them. So that might benefit you in some way to believe that, even though it's not true, literally. So he calls that metaphorical truth. And I don't know, like, I know this is probably just kind of semantics, but I don't know if I would want to apply the word truth to that. I feel kind of weird about applying the word truth to a thing that is literally false. I don't know. What do you?
Well, I mean, I get what he's saying. It is a matter of semantics, I suppose. But if you're living as though it were true, you know, I mean, there's other ones like Santa Claus being real, you know, if you're a child and, you know, you behave as if it was true, it means that, you know, he knows if you're naughty or nice, so you need to be nice so you don't get a lump of coal, right? But I think the best example, way better than the porcupine, was the one that Sam brought up that they said some fan actually sent in, and that's the weapons rules.
Yeah.
And I guess civilians have slightly different rules than we do in the military, because I've heard it from like NRA stuff. But, you know, for us, it's a treat, never keep. Right.
Yep.
But the first one is treat every weapon as if it was loaded. And like that's, and you know, the other rules are important as well, but the treat every weapon as if it were loaded is a perfect example of it, a metaphorical truth. But I don't know. I get what you're saying. I don't have as much of a problem with it, but it isn't true. So why is there any caveat to the word truth? I get that. There shouldn't be an adjective for truth. It's either true or it's not.
Yeah.
But then I guess that would go into, if it weren't for that terminology, then maybe they would have gotten bogged down in Jordan Peterson's definition of truth again, you know, and they would have. So it was a necessary term to come up with.
I don't mind it. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but I just feel weird about using the word truth in that sense.
Yeah. Truth with any adjective seems like,
yeah,
there shouldn't be adjectives for truth.
Yeah. I just feel weird. It's not that big of a deal, but
yeah.
I do find the concept of metaphorical truth interesting though. And so a question that I thought of while listening to this and listening to them discuss metaphorical truth is that, could there be situations where it would be better for us to not know the literal truth? With the weapon example, treat every weapon as if it were loaded. The metaphorical truth there would be every weapon is loaded. And even if you know that's false, you're still treating every weapon as if it were loaded. But in that case, you can know that metaphorical truth is literally false and still behave as if it's true and derive the benefit from it. But are there any situations where you would rather not know the literal truth? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like in that case, it's harmless to know the literal truth.
Yeah, as long as you still behave. The metaphorical truth is literally true.
Right.
You're still getting the benefit from it. But what if it actually harms you to know the literal truth? Could there ever be a situation like that?
I suppose I would think to a lot of Christians, maybe not a lot, but at least some Christians might think that that's the case. Like I've certainly heard people tell me that if they found out that, say, God didn't exist or that Jesus didn't actually die and wasn't resurrected or whatever, that if any of that wasn't true, it would actually totally destroy their worldview. And in that case, it seems they wouldn't be content just behaving as though it were true, behaving the way the Bible says to, but that it would, knowing that literal truth, if it is the literal truth, would actually devastate them, that they wouldn't be able to continue and live as though it were true. I don't know if that's like a really mainstream idea, but I certainly know at least a few Christians that would be the case.
Yeah. I know people who have said that. I've heard people say that. I might have even said that myself at one point, but I don't know. I think you could question whether or not that's actually true.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they might be totally wrong. They might just think that, and then
they might just think they're going to be devastated, but if they found out, you know, if they actually find out, then they just be sad for a little bit. And then they'd find out that life goes on.
Yeah.
And they'd be fine. So
they'd basically still behave as though it were true, kind of, you know?
Yeah. But, I don't know. Like, I think The hard part about this is that we can't know in advance whether or not it will benefit us to know the literal truth or not. Right? Like before we know the literal truth of something, we can't know if it's going to benefit or harm us. So, and if it turns out, I think if it turns out that it does harm us, then there's no way to go back and unlearn that. You know, think about like the atomic bomb. Think about splitting the atom. Like there's no way to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, that truth
Once we learned how to do
definitely.
that was it. Like maybe you could probably make a pretty good case that we would have been better off just not discovering that ever. But we did. So now it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if we were to live as though, if we were to live as though an atom could not be split, that would be a better world than the literal truth, which is that atoms can be split. And that, you know, that's the world we are actually in. So maybe that's an example of not just should we live that way as though the atom can't be split and basically stop making nuclear weapons if the world would do that as one. But you could argue easily that that knowledge, that literal truth, has done a lot of damage, and we would be better off not knowing that you can split the atom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the hard part about it. Like once you learn something, you can't unlearn it.
Yeah.
Like when I was before I stopped being a Christian and I thought, you know, there's literally a God, and then I learned what I think is correct now, that there's not one.
Sorry.
Like I can't unhear all those arguments that I heard that convinced me that there's not a God. Or that convinced me that I don't have enough evidence to believe there is one. I'll put it that way. But yeah, I mean, I don't really know where I'm going with this, I guess. But the point
Well,
is
let me
that
kind of take it a little bit farther, and you say, so I think if there's another example where people think that way, I mean, I don't know, I don't think it's true, but I've heard the argument and I kind of get it, but it's someone like prominent religious thinkers, like maybe even someone like Ben Shapiro, maybe even like Jordan Peterson, even though Jordan Peterson seemed to make the claim that you can live as though there is a God. And that, so to him, it wouldn't be an example like you're talking about. Like that, if you did find the literal truth of there not being a God, clearly he's not arguing that that would be so harmful that you couldn't live as though there was one, because that's what he says he's doing.
yeah.
But there are people who claim that society would be, you know, horrible if people didn't believe in God. So you have, you know, I think it's a prominent sort of idea within kind of religious thinkers, is that those who are less intellectual and that think a little bit less, that those people need religion, and that without it, we'd have just a society of, you know, assholes. But that if that literal truth, if it is the truth, were to be known to everyone, that we couldn't survive it, basically, that society wouldn't really be able to handle it. And then obviously, you have many prominent militant atheists that think the world would be a much better place if everybody learned that truth. So, and that's one of those things we can't know until it actually happens, if it ever happens. But yeah, I think on a societal scale, there are people who claim that. I think on a personal scale, like you talked about before, a lot of people might think that learning that literal truth, if it's true that there is no God, would ruin their life, and they just have no moral compass anymore. I think most of them pretty much would get over it, and find that their morals don't actually change very much. But I think many more people who wouldn't even necessarily make that claim do claim that society needs it, you know, and that the less
Yeah.
religious we are, you know, and there's certainly decent arguments about it, you know, about, I mean, it's all hypothetical about a society with no religion whatsoever, but you know, people definitely argue that being less religious brings about more problems, whatever. There's, you know, actual you know, numbers and data that you can actually use. But, you know, I think it was John Adams talked about virtue, that we needed a virtuous people, that liberty without virtue was pretty much going to lead us down a bad path, and that for liberty to really work, we needed a virtuous populace, and for a virtuous populace, we need religion. So kind of to, if you take that point about can learning a literal truth actually be damaging, there are certainly plenty of prominent religious thinkers and maybe even unreligious thinkers who see the benefit of religion that would argue that society, that might be true for society if they found out God wasn't real.
I think that's the heart of the whole Peterson-Harris debate, is how beneficial is religion versus how harmful is it? Peterson comes down on the side of it's way more beneficial than harmful, and Harris comes down on the other side. But I think that's the core of it. And I think it's one of those things that we, you know, I agree with you. I don't think we can know really for sure until, you know, someday if all religion disappeared, then we would be able to find out. But yeah, we can't really know it. You know, how would we know that? We can make arguments, and that's kind of what this whole debate was about, but it's hard to really know for sure. But I can see, and this is why I said I don't really know which of those guys I agree with more. I don't know what I believe about that. I will say a strong argument on Peterson's side for me is, like you said before, about the average person who doesn't think very much, maybe they're better off thinking there's a God who cares if they masturbate, you know?
Right.
And I don't know, maybe most people are like that. Maybe most people aren't, I don't know, but I can see the argument being made that there are enough people like that in the world that they're better off being religious.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of boils down to, obviously it's a lot more to the debate than this, but I think one of the fundamental things you need to ask yourself and think about when you're making an argument like that is how much faith do you have in humanity? You know, how much credit do you want to give human beings? You know, if you have a very cynical view, which is really easy to have, especially nowadays looking at social media, and it does seem sometimes that people on the whole are just really, really stupid. But, you know, that's a really cynical outlook. But I think someone like, you know, if you're using that as an argument for why we need religion, that, you know, sure, like maybe you atheist, maybe you individual thinker, you can be moral and follow all the rules and not believe in God. But what about all the dumb masses? You know what I mean? And I think on the one hand, again, it's kind of easy to believe and jump on that bandwagon. But someone like Christopher Hitchens, I think, might argue that, you know, it's like, what a contemptible thought that, you know, we need to be babysat as humanity, that we can't come to those conclusions on our own, that we need, you know, mythology or mysticism or magic to make us believe and make us behave, you know. Now, and I'm actually torn, because I don't want to believe that. I want to argue the way that Hitch did, you know, that we don't need a babysitter telling us how to behave. But it does seem every single day that humanity proves itself really, really stupid. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a neat sounding thing to say, like, how, you know, how contemptible is it to think that we need a babysitter? But what if we do?
Right.
What if we actually do? Right. I mean, the fact that you don't like that we need a babysitter doesn't mean we don't need one.
Yeah, but it's not just like, it's, I mean, you can actually, I think you could argue, and maybe Hitch would, that he genuinely does have faith in people, even dumb people, that we have this ability to reason, and people just need help in, you know, finding that ability to reason and honing it. And I don't know what the answer is, but I want to believe that people can reason, and that if, you know, even if most people seem dumb, that they just need to be shown the way. You know, they need to be shown the light of reason, and that, and they could. But that's kind of wishful thinking. Again, I don't know what the actual answer is, but every day seems more and more convincing that humanity is really dumb, and they do need a babysitter, and they do need to be told what to think. But I don't want that to be true.
And yeah, I hope that's not true. And maybe, maybe we'll get to that point sometime, someday, where we don't need a babysitter.
Yeah, like, I think that's the fundamental point, or that that might be the fundamental disagreement between, you know, maybe an atheist advocating that we should try and convince people, on the, like the people, that, you know, they don't need religion, and then the other religious thinkers, or even non-religious thinkers that see the utility in religion, arguing that you need it. It kind of seems like it boils down to your opinion in the intelligence of the average person, or your trust in the wisdom of ordinary people.
Yeah.
So it seems a little pretentious and you know, elitist to think that, you know, because people that are talking like that, they obviously don't think of themselves as those dumb people that need to be told. Even the religious people who are arguing, the religious thinkers that are arguing that the people need this because they don't, they're saying, I'm more capable than they are. I can contemplate all this stuff and I can reason through it. And I would love to talk to people about it, but they need it because they're just too dumb, you know, and it's pretty pretentious, you know what I mean? And nobody wants to hear that. Nobody would want to admit that they are one of those people, you know? So
nobody would want to admit that they are one of those dumb people who need religion. And also nobody would want to admit that they are one of those pretentious people who thinks that they're not one of the dumb people.
Right. Well, you wouldn't want to do it out loud anyway, or publicly. Yeah. They all think it. You know?
Yeah.
But you inherently say people are dumb. You are like almost by, you know, inherently saying, except for me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think what it comes down to for me is we need to trust in reason, I guess. Like, if there's anything that's going to get us to a point where we can live on our own without religion, it's reasonable discussions with each other. That's something Sam Harris has said in the past. I think it was in one of his books or something, but he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, no society has ever been harmed by becoming too reasonable.
Right. Yep.
So we become more, hopefully as time goes on, we trust this process that updates our moral values and we become more and more reasonable, hopefully. And maybe someday that'll lead us to a point where we can get along just fine without religion and nobody needs it. Or maybe it'll get us to a point where religious people and atheists can coexist peacefully and everybody can be happy. You know, maybe there's some kind of a utopia like that where people are reasonable and they don't need to be fundamentalists. They don't need to go, you know, blow up buildings for their religion. They don't need to force their religion on other people. And they can all live
happily ever after.
But, you know, I don't know. I think if anything is going to get us there, it's reason.
Yeah. 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 I think, I mean, we are talking about utopias and dystopias, and none of it's probably ever going to come true. But I definitely agree with Sam saying that, you know, no society was ever too reasonable. You know, no society ever got worse because it was too reasonable. But yeah, I think it would help if we actually inculcated children with reason. If we started teaching rhetoric and logic at much younger ages, stop spending so much time teaching kids about the different cloud names and the state bird of, or, you know,
and, how to write.
how to write in cursive. Yeah, whatever. Okay, I actually do like cursive, but whatever. Yeah, I get the argument. And spend more time, not just on math and all that crap, but, you know, people make good points that we should be teaching life skills and stuff, but I think we need to be teaching civics more. We need to be teaching kids to love liberty. I think, and it's the parents' fault. We can't blame the schools, but it would be great if that's where it was happening. But we need kids to be inculcated with the ideals of reason, logic, liberty. We need to know what our rights are at a much younger age. And I think that that's our problem. You know, you wait till people are grown up.
We need to learn about logic and argument. We need to learn about how to construct an argument and how to actually listen to what the other person is arguing and respond to it, rather than going off on some tangent and responding to something they didn't say and talking past each other.
Yeah. Like, I mean, logic is kind of a universal language, so you kind of know it when you hear it for the most part. But the first time I like formally learned anything about logic, like the rules of it and the fallacies and the way that, you know, I mean, again, it's kind of natural to some people, but when actually like officially technically learned it was in some public speaking class in college when I went to that first college before I went to the academy. I think it was called communications. Like it was called, you know, public communications or something like that. And that was the first time I actually like learned about the actual theory of logic, you know, and I learned all these different fallacies and kind of how to rebut an argument. You know, you can take two different absurd, you know, premises and you come up with the same conclusion and it makes that conclusion seem dumb that they came up with. Or you take the same premises and show that that conclusion doesn't necessarily follow, that there's other conclusions. You know, it's like the premise versus conclusion sort of relationship and all that. The first time I ever learned about the technical details there was in college, you know. So I think unless you're one of those people that joins the debate club, which I wish I had. I mean, I wish I knew about that really growing up or that someone had put me in that. But that seems... Everyone should be in debate club. You know, that shouldn't even be a club. It should be a class, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. It would be bad for all these social media conversations. It would be great if we had some kind of a referee who would like call a flag, like throw a flag if you didn't respond to the other person's point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
that happens.
Try
so
that
much.
Again. Respond to them.
Yeah, not like shutting down speech. You just get like a flag and people get to, you get to keep talking, but everyone gets to know that you suck, you know, that you're bad at this. Maybe they could track it and they'd be like, oh, look, Jason McGinty, he has 1,000 red flags or whatever. Not red flags. I don't want it to be too soccery. We'll just call it a flag, like in football, like American football.
Yeah.
Which I used to watch. So what else?
You got anything else about the debate?
Yeah, I mean, did you have a third point about
that? Yeah, my third point, we kind of already touched on it a little bit, but it was actual belief in God versus behaving as if God exists.
Yeah.
We already talked about that a little bit, but I don't know, do you have anything else to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of plays into my overall thoughts about these two guys. I mean, if either of them are talking individually, I like 90% of what they're saying. And I don't think they're all that different. People act like they're so different, but I think
they're both very free speech minded people.
Yeah. The most important things are they completely agree on, like the free speech, you know, and
respect
like
for the process that updates moral judgment.
Exactly. And then all the morals that they have are actually the same. They're just arguing about where they come from.
Yeah.
You know, not all the morals, but pretty much all the morals they have.
Almost.
What's that?
Almost all of them.
Right. So we've talked about this before, actually, and instead of talking about, you know, literal truth versus metaphorical truth, we've spoken about it in just in terms of what is true and what is useful, because it's really the same thing, you know. And so again, we've spoken about this before, and the thing about Sam Harris and the whole argument about free will is, I think it's a cool conversation to talk about free will. And I remember in like, again, it was a philosophy class, like 101 or something. Was the first time I ever really thought about free will. And in that class, you know, you had, they walked us through the different philosophers, and one argued that we had it, another argued we didn't, and it was all so good. And it is an interesting conversation, but the way I feel is that I'm not actually that interested in whether or not we have free will, because it seems to me that for my life to be worth anything, for, you know, for it to, I need to live as though I have free will. There's something like free will here. You know, maybe I don't actually literally have free will. And Sam Harris makes really good points that I don't think there's a great rebuttal for. And almost every time I hear someone like Ben Shapiro or even Jordan Peterson argue against Sam when it comes to free will, they're just arguing practical, like usefulness. They're like, yeah, you know, they make a ridiculous straw man, like, oh, so you're just a bag of meat floating through the world and just neurons firing. So what the hell's the point? It's like, okay, it's a good question. It's definitely a good question. But what if you disprove anything? It's not an actual rebuttal.
Are that?
What's that?
What if you are just a bag of meat?
Yeah, like maybe you are, but I think the
answer, the fact that you characterize it to sound ridiculous doesn't make it not true.
Right, exactly. So like my answer to like Ben Shapiro saying that would be like, well, we just need to live as though we have free will. And that's so I like don't agree with Sam Harris in that aspect. I mean, he may be right about the free will, but I'm less interested in that. I'm more interested in this, in what's useful, or the metaphorical truth. I live as though I have free will, and I can't freaking totally debunk, you know, and nobody can. I can't totally debunk the idea that free will is an illusion. Most arguments against it that I've heard that free will isn't an illusion is more like, it's kind of like wishful thinking. It's like, well, wouldn't that be a shitty world to live in? It's not that they actually can disprove it. And I think Sam Harris, again, especially with that thought experiment where he asked about like name a city. So it's a great thought experiment and it really makes you think, but again, to me, it seems more useful to live as though I have free will because there's something like free will going on. So that's the only way we need to live. That's the way you pretty much have to live, practically speaking, as though your actions have consequences and that you're in control of your actions and that you need to hold people accountable and hold yourself accountable. That's the type of world we want to live in. And you can get there just from a pragmatic standpoint. You know what I mean?
So at a minimum, you feel moment to moment like you have free will.
Right.
You feel like you're making decisions.
Yep.
So it's useful to behave as if you are making decisions.
Yeah. So it may be a metaphorical truth and not a literal truth, but it's still useful to believe it, the metaphorical truth, you know, so to live as though I have free will. And I feel that it seems exactly what Jordan Peterson's saying when he talks about God. He lives as though there is a God, and I live as though I have free will. And I don't know, I think maybe Jordan Peterson would say we're all living as though there is a God, and I don't think that's true.
Yeah, it seems to me that he makes an assumption there about what it would mean to live like there is no God.
Yeah.
Like he always refers to Crime and Punishment. I don't know if you ever read that in school. No. But it's about Raskolnikov is the character, and I don't know. Long story short is he behaves in that book like he's the example that Jordan Peterson points to of what it would be like to behave as if there is no God, like if you took it to its logical extreme. And Raskolnikov in that book murders a lady and then feels bad about it later. Right. But yeah, he always points to that. And I think, I don't know, I don't agree with his, I think he's assuming too much.
Right. Yeah, but I think that's what's so interesting about this conversation to me is I hate that they actually get bogged down so much in the specifics of where morality comes from, You know, I mean, it's an interesting conversation and it's worth having. But it's true that, like, both Sam and Jordan are living as though there is a fundamental moral truth. And, you know, and the point of their argument is, where does that come from? But, you know, I actually don't find that terribly interesting. You know, I don't care where it comes from. And I'm content with Sam's explanation. I mean, that, you know, so Sam's right, I think, when he says that you imagine the worst possible suffering for everybody, and that's bad. If bad means anything, it means that. Mm-hmm. But then Jordan does this thing all the time where he's like, well, what do you mean by bad? Or what do you mean by truth? And I just think, I like Jordan, and maybe this is oversimplifying, I think it's kind of a cop-out. It happens all the time. But that is something we should, it should go without saying that you can admit that the worst possible suffering for everyone is bad. And like Sam says, if bad means anything, it's that. So once you have that, that is a fundamental moral truth that doesn't need anything else, doesn't need some substrate to build on. And I mean, I don't know. I find that convincing. And he doesn't think that that's, Jordan doesn't think that that needs to be true or something. What is it? He kept saying, that's not a fact.
Yeah. I think it says that's not like
fact.
That's not the bottom.
Right.
Like he says, that's not an axiom, I guess.
Right.
Is what Peterson would say.
Right. So here's what's funny. So even, you know, before the debate started, and then after the debate too, the thing about Jordan Peterson that, you know, I don't love is that, actually, shit, let me think how I want to say this. So I agree with Jordan that it doesn't seem necessarily true that, okay, when it comes to the question of where does morality come from, Jordan Peterson seems, I mean, I guess he basically is arguing that it's God, maybe, kind of. But he spends the whole time not articulating what it is, but arguing with Sam about what it isn't. You know what I mean? But I get that, and I do basically buy it. I like what Jordan is doing when he's questioning the baseline, the fundamental axiom upon which all morality is based. So I don't know the answer, but I kind of like that he keeps pointing out that maybe Sam doesn't either. And maybe he doesn't. I mean, I think Sam has a pretty sound argument, but Jordan's points are pretty much impossible to answer, or they are hard to answer. But then on the other side of it, I think there's nothing that Jordan says that rebuts the idea when Sam says that we don't need to believe anything on insufficient evidence to have morality, to have, you know, a system of ethics. So that's a point that Sam makes, which I really think is the fundamental point. That's what I'm more interested in. Not where does morality come from, but the question of, do we need to believe anything on insufficient evidence to be good people, to have a system of morality, to have a, what do you call it? What's the opposite of relativist? Like a...
Objective.
Right. Yeah. That we don't need to believe anything on insufficient evidence to have a system of objective morality. So that's a point that I don't think Jordan ever actually rebuts. He doesn't ever prove that, yes, you do need to believe things on insufficient evidence. But then on the other hand, I think when Jordan keeps asking, you know, on the baseline, at the very fundamental axiom, like, what is that based on? And maybe there's some faith at the bottom of it, or some belief at the bottom of it that isn't based on facts. I get what he's saying. I'm not I'm not sure who's right, but I get what he's saying. And
yeah,
I'm not sure that Sam ever actually beats that argument. He may.
I don't know that that's necessarily even a problem, though.
What's that?
Like, I don't know that that's necessarily even a problem. That, like, I'm willing to accept Sam's bottom principle. Like, the worst possible misery for everyone is bad, and we should move away from that. Like, that's the bottom of his,
yeah,
like, that's the foundation of his system. And I think I'm fine with accepting that. Like, I don't necessarily think that, maybe that's not an objectively true fact, but I'm not so sure it even matters.
Right. You know? This is kind of another question of usefulness, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think we can start with that. Like, I don't think it's not a hard thing to accept. Like, even if you want to do what Jordan does and argue that it's not an objectively true fact, like it's not really an axiom that you need to base it on something, it's not hard to accept.
Yeah, it seems. It
doesn't take a huge leap to accept that.
Yeah.
And I think, so I don't know, I just don't necessarily think it's a problem if it's not an objectively true fact.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem either. I just, from an argumentative standpoint, I think that Jordan makes a good point, and Sam can at best contend with it, but he can't defeat it. I don't think he can just defeat that point. And that's why they spend so much time talking about it. I actually found many parts of the debate really frustrating. They did get bogged down a lot of the time. Now, granted, it was like 4 hours or something of total debate. So there was still plenty of good stuff, but there were good chunks of time that was kind of like the podcast where they were really bogged down on definitions. And it's like, I wanted to pull my hair out. It's like, oh God, I don't actually care that much, you know? But overall, I thought it was a really good debate. And I think, I was disappointed that they didn't talk more about religion itself. I felt they spent so much time talking about the origins of morals and not talking about God or Jesus or the Bible. And like, that's what I wanted. And that's what I think lots of people wanted, this preeminent atheist thinker and this, like, I don't know what to call him, but religious defender for sure. Very smart religious defender. And they did spend some time doing that, but I not enough to me. That's what I'm most interested in, you know. So maybe Ben Shapiro would be a better one to have for that debate, you know, to stick to that topic. But you know, but every time Sam and Ben talk, I think, and again, I like Ben Shapiro, no disrespect, but I think Sam like owns him every time. And
yeah,
the most frustrating part is then Ben Shapiro will then go on and talk about, oh yeah, I had Sam on my show and I asked him blah 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 blah, as if he won the debate. He talks about it after the fact as though he made a good point that Sam couldn't answer. And it's like, that's never what happened. Sorry. Anyway, if they had like a proper, like not just one stupid hour, but like an actual long form for that purpose conversation, I think it would be very good. But they never do. But the difference is Sam doesn't walk around bragging about this conversation, you know, even though he totally does get the upper hand almost every time.
Yeah. Ben just has this way of talking where he talks really fast, and I feel like he just glosses over really complicated arguments all the time.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure he, you know, has them well thought out. It's just, we need a more long form conversation.
Yeah, it's just the way he presents it. It sounds like it comes across like it's not very well thought out. Like, I'm sure he does think about it a lot, but it just doesn't come across that way. It comes across as dismissive, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Sunday special that he had with Sam Harris, I mean, that was really satisfying to listen to. As again, I like both those guys, but I think Sam definitely, you know, that is Sam's area of expertise. Ben Shapiro is a Jew and a practicing I don't know if you call it Orthodox, but very religious Jew, right? But that's it. He's religious. I don't think he's actually some sort of preeminent theological thinker. You know what I mean? Whereas Sam, that's like his almost his entire shtick until the last couple of years. He started delving into other things, but that, you know, is religion, you know? So anyway, so yeah, that's about all I have to say on the, on Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson.
Yeah. Good stuff.
That's it for today's show. Thanks everybody for tuning in. So if you're watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button below. If you're listening on any of our other audio platforms, please make sure you subscribe, leave ratings or comments. It really helps algorithmically in getting the word out about our show. If you like the show, please share it with your friends on social media. Please like the Philosophication with Ginger and the Beard Facebook page. And please make sure you comment down below. We really want to engage you guys in free and open conversation. That's really the whole point of doing this. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.